Welcome to episode 214 of Ripboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is Fairgrounds' very own Kevin Kilroy. Me and Kevin go over three races from this past Saturday at the Fairgrounds. Those races were 6, 11, and 12, and some angles that we talk about are how you can still find value with top buyer horses in turf races, and also why the main favorite in the Louisiana Derby was a absolute perfect bet against. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me while we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. And I would like to welcome in my special guest for this week's second edition of Red Board Rewind, someone I have to have on if we're talking about the Fairgrounds. It's Kevin Kilroy. Kevin, how are you?
Spencer, I'm good, man. Thanks for bringing me on. And sorry I've been so dodgy to get a hold of and pin down. So just getting back to KC after wrapping up things in New Orleans. And life is crazy, man. These four kids, I want to hang out with them. I want to see them as much as possible. Feel like a horrible deadbeat dad when I'm away for a long stretch. And it's good to be around them. And then we got a lot moving forward. So things are good, though.
Rough travel schedule, man. I mean, for you, you must have the travel for that trip just figured out to a T at this point.
Oh, yeah. It's easy. You know, you just pop over there, you know, get on your get in that TSA pre-check line, cruise on through, and pop by Smoothie King and get a nice little smoothie, pop on the plane. Pow, I'm home. Easy.
Smoothie King. I have one around me. Never been. I think the prices are just a little bit too outlandish for me to be trying
Smoothie King. Oh, they are, man. They are. $15. But whenever I'm going in and out of New Orleans, it's like a nice little you know, like, oh, this is healthy. I'm doing something healthy. This is good.
All right. So big day, obviously, at the Fairgrounds. 12 races, big, heavy card. And it was something that I kind of brought up with Marshall, and we just talked about how if you look at like the later part, and obviously you play a lot of horizontals, I thought the pick four and pick five paid really well today. And obviously we're not going to talk about those races till later. We have one race kind of in the middle of the card, but if you kind of look through, like Red Route One was like, you know, an $11 horse, and this pick four and pick five still paid like $1,200. Like, you know, the pick four was obviously less, but I just kind of feel like when you actually get tracks that want to put a million horses through the gate, you then get some, like, just the better handicappers will end up winning instead of it being, you know, and not to, you know, crap on any tracks, but I talked with Santanita about Santanita last week, 46% favorites winning out there. And it's just like how hard it must be for those guys to open up the PPs every day. And then we come over here and we have nice full fields in every single race.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Chad Brown, Steve Asmussen, Chad Brown, Brad Cox for that late pick five, and it paid $1,200, like mm-hmm. you said. That's a good payout for those, you know, for horses that were definitely, you know, favorited and covered by a lot. And that middle pick five, I think, really paid well. I think it was around 9,000. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was great to see the pools be climbing, and just the quality of racing on the day, I just thought was really fantastic. You know, we'll get into a few of these races, but I don't think we're talking about the Munis, but I'm very busy. That was a big run. And obviously it was a big run there in the Pegasus turf before that. So Chad Brown's got another good one there. And I believe that's Cloud Computing's first
that to come to the races. Right. That sounds right.
Yeah. Which is, you know, Chad Brown's Preakness horse. So yeah, it was a cool day. It was a big crowd, really festive, sunny. And it just felt like what horse racing should be. So that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
I tried to play against that one, and I used the spot that it was the first off the layoff with a big number and the and the post position. Marshall kindly told me off air that I was effing nuts at that point.
Dude, I'm nuts for fading those type of horses all the time. I was all over Gigante, and at the eighth pole, I thought I was about to cash big. Because they slept on him. He was one of my few that I, you know, just look at the prices, waiting to see what I was going to get, and they didn't see that bad trip for Gigante last time. So I was ready to fire, and I did, but didn't get it done.
I feel like, especially just looking through, and obviously it was nice to do two podcasts a week, and we've kind of picked, you know, except for the big race for the boys, we have five separate races. I just felt like the favorites, if they did not run second. They ran off the board, and I think that these are the type of races where if you have it digitally, if you have it, you know, just the paper form, circle these races, and just at the end of a meet, look back and see. And all of a sudden, you'll notice patterns of just like, wow, these, the same type of horse just doesn't ever win, but the public just seems to love them. And I think that's such a key moment where you can, you know, obviously at the end of a meet, look back and see what is happening.
Oh, I think so, too. I was doing a column for a while for First Gen Sports, and it was just, I think it was just called They Didn't Know. And it was just looking back at the favorites and just see which ones were getting beat. And it was just so nice just to kind of sharpen up a little bit, you know, more, just focus in on what do these horses look like and what sort of races are they're in. And then also, like we're talking about with the payouts, that's something I always hear ITP talk about, you know, that he looked back and studied payouts, which sequences, you know, which sort of setups were paying out huge. If you get a feel for that, you can just get much better at picking races and handicapping races and not just picking winners, you know. And I think that's one of those journeys that we have to go on if we're going to really level up as horse players.
I can't tell you how many times people bitch and moan about how at the end of Naira pick fives and pick sixes, there's that crappy maiden 12-5 or $8,000 maiden race with 15 horses in that make no sense.
And yeah, we've got those too.
And that's always the get out race where everyone just gets their money back because some 45-1 shot wins, and or just even 8-1 shot wins, and everyone has, you know, money on that because they're just trying to make it even for the day. And I like the fact that we have those races to end in that it's not just a simple race. And you know, you want to make it difficult. Obviously, there's certain, you know, tracks that run pick fours, pick fives, that, you know, where you almost need to have six in every race. And you know, maybe that's a little bit too much, but you also want the racing to be competitive. And so I think, like we had talked about, you know, I think for me it's still, if the field sizes are there, the people will come to bet. And that's kind of have to be going forward, I think, for a lot of people, just like, if you're going to have 5 and 6 horse fields, I'm going to take my money somewhere else.
Yeah. 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 It's just, you know, it becomes a different sort of challenge or a different sort of setup. And yeah, luckily we were not dealing with that. This meet at Fairgrounds, I think it was like 8.7 runners was our average, but
that's great.
You know, for a stretch there at the end, it was in the tens, you know? So, it does just make it so there's value. There's meat on the bones. It's key.
It's one of the first races of this podcast. Race number 6 from the Fairgrounds. It is a 75,000 N1X, 1 mile on this turf course. And I think when you just first looked through for me, I ended up finding 2 in here. I kind of thought Calico, the 7, solid price, 4-1, Shane Wilson, just the average numbers. But 2 for 2 on the Fairgrounds turf, 3 for 4 at this distance. And when you go back through and you look through, if you take this last race out, that 81 last time on the lead looks just so enticing. And listen, if you don't like that race, 2 back is an 85. And so I think for a lot of people, you know, it's just easy to look back at the last race and go, oh, horse went off form. I can't tell you how many times I talk to handicappers who look at the form and just go, I didn't even realize that race was off the turf. And so I really feel like just making sure you're focusing on your running lines and seeing what is happening where. I thought this horse had a huge, huge chance in this one. I also thought Solid Country Gold for Jade Gilner also had one of those spots, just slowly improving off the claim. 56 in that first race. Yes, it was a sloppy track, but then gets right back into those numbers for Wayne Catalano. And when you have trainers who have some pedigree or just those solid, solid journeyman trainers, and then you have maybe trainers who, for me, I don't know as well, but are running the same type of figures, they kind of have this horse figured out. And I thought Solid Country Gold would have been the other one in this race for me. What about you, Kev?
Yeah, this was one horse for me, Cali Coco. It's interesting, you know, Shane Wilson, the trainer, he just won his first title, you know, at Fairgrounds and won 50 races. And, you know, he was at the lead, big time lead for most of the meet, and still, they would let him go at value, you know, at prices. So when I find Wilson horses that I like, I know I want to bet them to win because they just usually sleep on them. Now, that's not always the case. Of course, there's the favorites to get it done. There's horses like Overcharged and those sorts that, you know, what we charge is 1 to 9 on Sunday from his barn. But there's a lot of times when they just can't figure him out. And this is one that I wanted to take a swing with, you know, and this is one of the, you know, the advantages of, you know, being a nose rider at a track. You're going around and you're talking to the people, you know, you're sitting on the rail and you're chatting. And I asked Shane about that last race, the Eddie Johnston. And, you know, number one, that was against a good field, Jack Hammer, Behemoth Star, really good runners. But number two, it was just the muddy track. You know, he said back on turf, he's going to run his race again. He just started putting these caliber Choas, that's the sire, on the turf. And it's worked out really, really well. So he's kind of been able to uncover that. They've got some turf talent there, and he's really good at that, at noticing when horses need to move over to turf and get things figured out. So there was some other speed in here, but in terms of jocks, Jose Guerrero is always the most aggressive to get to the front. So I trusted that Guerrero was going to get out there. 4 to 1 on the morning line, I was just a little bit worried, but seeing how they're betting this one, I was like, all right, let's fire away Cali Coco.
I think too, when you realize how aggressive jockeys can be like that, that's such a key, because there's not a lot of jockey stats out there. There used to be, I think, something on Nairo where it would tell you how often they get to lead and not, but when you have that type of idea in your head already, you're so far in front of the rest of the class. But Cali Coco for myself and Kev. I also use a little bit of Solid Country Gold as well. Let's see who gets it done on the 6th right now.
They're off. Quaternion got pinched back at the start. Devil's Harvest broke well, along with Calicoco flashing the speed, per the norm for Jose Guerrero. So Calicoco likes the lead and gets it and looks to angle over in front of Devil's Harvest to the first turn. Then here's the inside as Faith Runner with Athens Moon in the green cap, and ZZ's Prince is running in 5th. Moment of Stardom, after briefly being fractious in the gate, is back in 6th, and they have 6 furlongs to run. Following ZZ's Prince and Moment of Stardom past midfield, Solid Country Gold and Brown Liquorman is saving ground. Quaternion's of the hot pink. Then comes Battle Scars with El Perfecto against the rail, and the gray Interlock Empire has dropped back to 12th. The opening quarter in 23.53 seconds. Calicoco leads the turf mile. It's Calicoco who leads Devil's Harvest by a couple lengths to the half mile pole. Faith Runner is saving ground, running in 3rd. Ivan Ortiz Jr. and Athens Moon galloping along in 4th, just inside 4 furlongs to go. ZZ's Prince a wide 5th, Moment of Stardom is 6th, Brown Liquorman in 7th, Solid Country Gold is 4 wide in 8th position, just over 3 furlongs to go. Quaternion's 9th, and then we come back to El Perfecto in 10th, Battle Scars is 11th, Interlock Empire remains last of 12, half mile, 48.91 seconds, inbound for the quarter pole. It's Calicoco. Calicoco leads as they straighten away. Calicoco in front of Devil's Harvest, Faith Runner with the rail, charging on the outside, Athens Moon along with Brown Liquorman in between horses. Interlock Empire, the great looks to rally with the rail. On the far outside, Quaternion, Solid Country Gold, Moment of Stardom has dropped away. They come down toward the final 16th. It's still Calicoco for Jose Guerrero. Calicoco with yards to go. Devil's Harvest with, on the outside, Brown Liquorman and Quaternion. Calicoco, wire to wire.
One, and it is Calicoco getting the job done. 79, the winning buyer. What's even more amazing in this race is the price of $15.20 to get the W here. I just think when you look at this field and you see the type of figures this horse has run, we always hear as figures being the equalizer to the odds board, where people just overbet figures. I mean, Athens Moon at sub 2-1 is just an underlay where, even if this is your top pick of the day, I find it almost impossible to play this horse at that odds in this type of field.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, IRAD, of course, takes money. Hartman a lot of times takes money. I mean, he's had, you know, not his strongest meet this past meet at Fairgrounds. Definitely that horse looked good, you know, in the last 2 wins, but that was an insane price. I look back at this race and, you know, as we do as horse players, I'm like, oh my man, Devil's Harvest was my guy, Chad Schexnader's long shot. That he was tipping to all of us. And I'm like, why did I not just stop and play that exacta?
Yep.
Put $10 on it, something, you know, 162 there for the 7-3. So, and I thought he hit the super, and it was a nose, I think, photo finish there between 3 and 4. And that separated him from hitting that super and not, while he was coaching his kid's baseball game and firing away from the benches. So, that was tough, but yeah, Calicoco got it done, looked good doing it, and I felt good, man. That was my spot play I was giving out on the on the airwaves last week, so hopefully some people catch that one.
Athens Moon, I mean, just looking back, and I'm not trying to beat you know, a bad favorite into the ground, but still, I mean, I guess first off the claim numbers, but if I see 29 first off the claim and 6% turf, that to me, I didn't look it up in Formulator, but that just doesn't tell me that's going to be the best. And also coming out of Albert Stahl's barn, how much is Chris Hartman supposed to improve this horse when he's also having a pretty cold meet to begin with in this? I also thought the other one was a Battle Scars going off at a lower price. I mean, just I can't see a 78 and a 76 and a 73 back-to-back-to-back versus horses running in the 80s, just the price difference. I think the public just missed on this one, and that going forward that these are just the type of races that you really have to try to figure out. And hopefully you haven't bet too much earlier in the day and you can find these races as not get-out-of-jail-free races, but yeah, ones where you can start to build the bankroll up from there.
Yeah, I mean, they bet jocks, right? Yeah. You see Pratt, you see Irad, and you're like, all right, this horse is live, right? That's why they're getting on board. And, you know, it's not that they're, you know, a lot of times they are, but if you can find connections that just are less known, especially on big days when you get a lot of eyes from, you know, from other tracks that aren't following the circuit quite as close, you can find value on those horses. And, you know, that a lot of times I like to think that some of these jocks like to get on board to get a feel for the course before their big races. You know, it's not always about getting on a live horse. Of course, they want to ride for Chris Block. Of course, they want to ride for, you know, Chris Hartman, because they do have good runners and you want to have those relationships. But it's not always because that horse is ready to win.
Let's move on to the next race. Race number 11 from the Fairgrounds. It is the Girls Prep, the Fairgrounds Oaks, 1 1/16 miles on the dirt. For me, this race was pretty straightforward. It's either Tarifa or Intrinsicate. I went with Tarifa. I just think the numbers look a little bit better, slowly improving. Had that slow pace two back and then just showed just how much better this one can get with that 90 in the Rachel Alexandria. I think if I'm not going to play Intrinsicate at all, I just need to just pass and just try to find the other one underneath that. Our Pretty Woman was interesting. Back-to-back sloppy races, but is, you know, has that spikes down in the pedigree, so you know how much those like the wet track. I thought maybe this one at just an interesting price of 4-1 might be able to, in a smaller field of six horses, if I'm already taking one chalk, this one is like third or fourth price, I can hit a nice little exacta here, and if it pays $10, I think I'm doing pretty well. What about you?
Yeah, this is one of those fields, right, where, you know, in the mornings, Intrinsicate has been just working outstanding, you know, and just, you know, all sorts of praise being showered on her. Vivi's Dream, lots of, you know, they see a lot of promise in her, a lot of potential. And her works, not quite as much leading up to this one, but earlier in the meet were stunners. They seemed really good. Tarifa, she is a she's pretty aggressive in the mornings, which, you know, mm-hmm, can spell good things, right? She's got a lot of run in her. She does. She's not very relaxed, but she's got a lot of run in her, and you can see it in the mornings. And I think you could see it in this race as well. So it was like, all right, these horses, these fillies are all ready to roll. They all seem really good. They're going to get bet. And Our Pretty Woman, it's just a simple angle of commanding speed. Who was going to go to the front with Our Pretty Woman? She's proven herself, getting out there and being aggressive to the front, has the nice pace figures early. Rosario up. I'm like, Our Pretty Woman is going to get out, going to be in a good spot. And the works on the fast track have been great. Outworked Hall of Fame, or whatever mm-hmm. that's worth. We'll talk about that recently. And I just thought she could hold her own. So for me, this was a key in my double. Just used Our Pretty Woman, and then put her together with my top three in the Louisiana Derby, which we can talk about in the next race here. But Our Pretty Woman was the one for me. I thought, and I was surprised we were getting 4-1. You know, mm-hmm. 4-1 in the morning line. I thought we'd be bet down from there. So the price did seem ripe for attack.
Tarifa for myself, but I'm also using Our Pretty Woman. That's Kev's top pick. Let's see who gets it done in this prep right now.
They're off in the Fairgrounds Oaks, presented by Fasig Tipton. Tarifa broke well toward the inside, Midsummer March, and there's Our Pretty Woman, who's up and after the lead for Joel Rosario. Our Pretty Woman narrowly in front at the first turn. Midsummer March holds the rail and exchanges a brush there with a very keen Tarifa. Flavian Pratt and Tarifa, the Rachel Alexandra Stakes winner in the Godolphin Blue. So it's Our Pretty Woman went to the front. Our Pretty Woman leads these three-year-old fillies to the back of the track from Tarifa, who's now second. Enter the inside for Relu Gutierrez. Midsummer March taken back in third. Intricate, fourth on the outside for Tyler Gaffalione, making this backstretch run. Brian Hernandez Jr. has Vivi's Dream between fillies, and under the hands of Corey Lattery, the Louisiana-bred Accommodate Eva has dropped back to trail the sextet. The quarter for Our Pretty Woman, 23.84 seconds. They near the half-mile pole here in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Our Pretty Woman continues in charge of the pace as Tarifa starts to draw in, and following her, Intricate right there on the outside. Vivi's Dream moves to within three lengths off these leaders, and they have just over three furlongs to go. Midsummer March has dropped back once under pressure, and the trail remains Accommodate Diva. It's still Our Pretty Woman from a looming up Tarifa. Vivi's Dream together with Intricate as they come toward the quarter pole. Then we trail back to Midsummer March and finally Accommodate Diva. Three quarters, 1 minute 12.42 seconds. They turn for home, and there goes Tarifa. For Flavian Pratt, Tarifa has taken the lead from Our Pretty Woman, who tries to respond to Tarifa into this final Fairgrounds furlong. And these two fillies face off. It is Tarifa narrowly. Tarifa from toward the inside, a very game. Our Pretty Woman, Vivi's Dream is third. It is Tarifa narrowly over Our Pretty Woman. Tarifa triumphant, and the Fairgrounds Oaks beats Our Pretty Woman.
And it is Tarifa who gets the job done. $95 the winning buyer, $5 the winning mutual. But man, Our Pretty Woman runs well in defeat, improves the buyer. Just like I thought, as much as you thought, it's, you know, it's rough for you on the double end. I think you still got a nice little race out of here. And I think us both being correct to, you know, fade one favorite and play. And, you know, play the other one, at least on my end. And for you, I would imagine that you were still more Tarifa over Intrinsicate as well. Fun race. Exacta paid $11. I mean, in a six-horse field, what else can you really try and do except turn a $5 horse into an $11, $80 horse?
There's 11 on one. That's pretty good. I shouldn't have because I would have still liked Our Pretty Woman on top and played that, you know, played that cold. Yeah, I thought she ran well, Tarifa. Yeah, a little bit, still a little trouble there at the end, at the beginning there. Just trying to relax and trying to get into the spot, but she was impressive. She was impressive. It's weird to see, you know, how these other fillies ran, but Vivi's Dream, you know, talking to McPeak after he was, you know, he's going to talk to the owners, but they're thinking, you know, maybe the Eight Bells, maybe not go after the Kentucky Oaks. And then, Walsh, you know, I heard this Steve Bick was talking about it. So, maybe a little mucus in with Intricate. So okay. I don't think we should dismiss her going forward because she still, I think, has the talent and is, you know, obviously in the right connections of Walsh getting it done with these fillies. But that's, I mean, that's just Brad Talk swept our four Kentucky Oaks preps. Alpine Princess, West Omaha, Tarifa. How good is he with these 3-year-old fillies? I think we overfocused a little bit on what he's doing with his colts, but the fillies, I mean, the barn just does great with them. And Tarifa, that was a nice win there. That was nice.
It's nice to hear about the mucus problem with Intrinsicate. I just wonder if, for me, this one almost ran too bad to believe. So maybe that one will be one looking forward that we will have to bet back. Let's move to the last race, race number 12 from the Fairgrounds. It is the Louisiana Derby, 1/3/16 miles on the dirt. I literally just talked about this race like 20 minutes ago with Marshall, so I'm going to let you lead this off so I can collect my thoughts again.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a race that you just – you wanted to have a clear sort of sense of the design, I thought, you know, and how the pace would unfold leading into it. You know, I was like, all right, Hall of Fame on the rail, Track Phantom on the far outside, these two, same barn, but they just need to take the gloves off and they just need to go at it. Who was going to be right behind them? Who was going to set up there? And I thought Antiquarian too, you know, not a rabbit for Agate Road, you know, by any means, just sort of a sacrifice like that, but one who probably wanted to speed up and get out and heat things up. And they would benefit, of course, Agate Road. For me, it just seemed like Track Phantom was stepping back, you know, just hadn't seen him move forward. Now he just had a slow, comfortable pace last time. So I'm like, all right, just because he didn't have to go faster doesn't mean that he couldn't have gone faster. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, maybe he can just prove himself better than this field. I thought that Catching Freedom, I thought they were going to sleep on Catching Freedom. Just a lot of narratives around him as not being that impressive, you know, just in terms of how he works, in terms of how he runs his races, still being green, just hasn't really caught a lot of people's sort of praise. But seeing him, he was getting bet pretty hard. Maybe he'll be like, he was taking more money than I thought. But my top pick in here, and I thought we'd get better than that 6-1 morning line, was Common Defense.
Yeah.
Kim McPeak, kind of, you know, not necessarily an audible. I think he had a lot of options up for, you know, many, many three-year-olds. But we had been running this one at Oaklawn and brings him here. And Realman Violin's been pointing to this race all along, that stablemate there. A now horse that I could see in that Rebel, where he just put himself into the race early on. He just said, no, I'm going up. I'm going up after him. And he took BJ for a ride just a little bit close there to those forward four horses, but looked good. Big old stride. Got ran down by Timberlake on that outside spot on the Rebel. I'm like, this horse is moving forward. This is the now horse. And I think he's going to have more tactical speed than they realize. I think he's going to be right off the front. And I think he's going to get that first run at that sort of track Phantom Hall of Fame / antiquarian, you know, front running monster, however that shapes up. So 10-1, especially after getting kicked out of my my double there, where I used Common Defense and I used Catching Freedom. I did a win bet here on Common Defense.
Common Defense was the second horse that I used in this race, and I'll try and be a little bit more brief than I was in the last podcast, but I think the same stuff for you. Timberlake was just so good. This one came out at 27-1 in that race, ran such a solid second. Now we get 6-1 here in a race where I just, listen, you could not pay me to bet Track Phantom with someone else's money. I would not do that to a friend. I would not do that to an enemy of mine. It's just the horse hasn't improved enough, and in that last race, now we have a pace flow downgrade as well. Just too many negatives for this one. Now we have an outside post again. Catching Freedom for me was the one. I just wondered, 87 in the Samari Jones runs it right back in the Risen Star, but has a positive pace flow with closing into a slow pace. I just thought this one was going to get a little bit of an upgrade in this one and possibly just catch the right kind of trip. No one else really spoke to me and listened in a field of 12 when you can cross out 8 or 9. It's always good, including the favorite. So for me, I was on top of Catching Freedom, and I was also going to use a little bit of Common Defense. But it is Common Defense for Kevin. For me, I'm going to use that one as well as Catching Freedom. Let's see who gets it done in the Louisiana Derby right now.
They're off in the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby. And there's Awesome Rudo, who strides away. Hall of Fame with Antiquarian, who broke through the gate prior to the start, and now Track Phantom. With this early bid for Joel Rosario to take the early lead as they head toward the first turn, it's Track Phantom, who's emerged in front of Hall of Fame with Common Defense right there, Awesome Ruta in fourth, Antiquarian in fifth, and Tuscan Gold is sixth as they enter the first turn. Then comes Next Level. One off the rail is Realman Violin, and they have 7 furlongs to run as these leaders go to the back of this historic New Orleans track. Anna Maria is racing outside of Agate Road, who settled with the rail, and Catching Freedom has dropped back to be 11th and last. The opening quarter covered in 23.49 seconds. So it's Track Phantom. Track Phantom dictates the pace here from Common Defense, who stays close to Track Phantom, who's allowed to dictate terms here for the run to the half-mile pole, with on the outside Tuscan Gold in the gold cap, and Hall of Fame is running in fourth. Awesome Root in the red cap in fifth. Then comes Antiquarian, a wide sixth. Next Level is seventh. Realman Violin, eighth between horses, and 6 lengths from Tuscan Gold, who leads the Louisiana Derby field past the half mile. Then comes Anna Marie, still together with Agate Road, and the trailer remains Catching Freedom. Half mile in 48.33 seconds. 3/4 for Track Phantom, 1 minute 12.54 seconds. It's Track Phantom who leads coming toward the quarter pole. But Common Defense has been right there with the front runner. It's Track Phantom and Common Defense. They're a neck apart as they turn for home. Antiquarian is sweeping outside of Tuscan Gold. Then toward the inside, Awesome Ruta. Hall of Fame down there with the rail. Catching Freedom is unwinding on the extreme outside through the final quarter of a mile. And it's Common Defense to toward the inside. Track Phantom determined. Track Phantom sticking that neck out. Just holds Common Defense. Moving up Dusk and Gold. And here comes Catching Freedom, who's charging for Flavian Pratt. They come past the 16th. Last to first. It's Catching Freedom to win the Louisiana Derby.
And it was Catching Freedom getting the job done. 97 the winning buyer. 860 the winning mutual. Track Phantom off the board. Common Defense, I thought, still ran well in this race. And when you get 10-1 on the type of horse, I'm fine firing shots off like that. Because, listen, got beat by a couple others. But as you can see, this is definitely a flow upgrade race where a lot of closers came just out of the clouds and got the job done.
Yeah, it's a curious race. It's a curious race. First, congrats. You had a good day, man. Three that we talked about, you had on top. So nice work. You know, the fractions weren't fast, right? Oh, yeah. It's definitely, we see the closers getting it done and the flow played out that way, but it wasn't too fast. Track Phantom was getting pressured for sure by Common Defense, but not more than we've seen him take before, and nothing too eyeball to eyeball. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised to see them not have it to the end there. Distance, I think, is what we've got to question. Can Track Phantom, you know, get that those longer distances? Mm-hmm. Common Defense, I mean, the gallop out was good. He just wouldn't go by Track Phantom / Track Phantom. He's pretty game at turning back horses. We've seen that time and again through his early stages. And, you know, maybe a minor excuse seeing Tuscan Gold. I just watched this race back a bunch today. I was writing about it, so sorry if I go too much detail. But
no, please,
Tuscan Gold came in front of Common Defense, you know, got in his lane. And, you know, I think he had already been proven that he wasn't going to go by, but maybe, you know, maybe he would have had a little bit more there to get up a little bit better speed figure, you know, maybe finish fourth. But it was a big run by Tuscan Gold. It was a really good run by Antiquarian. He had broke through the gate, mm-hmm. and he also had to yield his spot there coming out of the turn as basically Common Defense's butt just sort of dropped back into the trackers line. There was four of them lined up there, and that was right where Antiquarian was. So I think he had a good shot. He came back on really well. But Catching Freedom, you know, he yields his spot out of the gate, you know, goes to last. I see him in last on the backstretch, and I'm just like, oh my God, this horse, what's the deal? You know, is he going backwards? What's the deal? And somehow circles that field and runs them all down. And that run with Anna Marie, when they're in tandem there, coming down the center of the track, that was cool. And Catching Freedom just, He's a competitor. He's got a lot of heart. He can take dirt, you know, he can get through tough traffic, and he's moving forward. So I think this was a big run. And if you look at the buyers, right, every one of these horses, all the way down to Awesome Ruta, moved forward off of their last effort. Mm-hmm. So this was a good race. I think this was a good race. I think we're going to see some big efforts come out of it. I don't think we can draw a line through Track Phantom, you know, in the Derby. Seeing how he moved forward through this, although there are some big question marks, so you'd want to see a price and want to see the pace scenario. Anna Marie should move forward. Maybe he kind of shied away from Catching Freedom, who was maybe a little bit, you know, sort of holding his own a little bit more in terms of intimidating Anna Marie. Maybe he just needed this race, and his third one, he'll be moving forward. This is an interesting one. I think this is one that we've got to really focus on as we are, you know, we've got a bunch more to race, but this seems like a key Derby prep to me.
I think this is one of the races I talked about with Marshall, just how, like, everyone likes to play the Derby preps. Everyone likes to, you know, play the Derby props where they're taking horses, you know, back in September, or they're taking them in March right now before the races. And I've never been one to really be in on that. I just feel like for me, you won't know until until that week. And even like we've seen in the past few years, it's just been craziness after craziness happening in the Derby, where the favorites are getting sick the day before. We're having horses get DQ'd. I think this year also is just, don't fall in love with a horse too soon. Get to that week for the Derby, figure out, watch the replays, listen to the reports that are coming in, and really don't make your decision until the night before, the day of, because these fields to me just feel like it's going to be wide open again this year.
Yeah, I think that's just great advice across the board. And the Derby is like the case study for where we really make that mistake again and again and again. We want to wear the pin. You know, we want to love. We want to say we have this horse. This is our Derby horse. And it's fun. And not to take anything away from that, because I really do love that. But as far as being a gambler, and if you're going to jump into these markets and bet and do it as wise as possible, It's more like the more they're fading, more the narratives sort of start fading these horses, the more you want to take interest, because that's when you're going to get some value, get some prices, and maybe be a little bit sharper than others. That being said, all horses have to put out picks and all that sort of stuff and defend them and all that good thing. But as a gambler, I'll definitely be, on my toes as this Derby, as they line up there into the gate and fire away when I see that value.
Great advice as always. And with that, we're going to end this podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Kevin Kilroy, for coming on. Kev, what do we got going down the pipeline going forward?
Dude, good news. Good news on the job front, man. I'm going to be heading up to Churchill here April 15th. Going to be the new racing analyst with Joe Kett. Shapiro, my guy, one of my favorites out there. And one of the great guys in the game. He's just been having some health issues and he's got to step away. So, sending my best to him, somebody who really deserves all our support. And but it's his seat's open and I'm going to be taking it, man. So I'll be moving to Louisville and be at Churchill and live in the dream and still staying connected to Fairgrounds, starting up the meet, coming down for all that. So I'll still be a part of that, which is great. My favorite track, but good stuff, man. I'm heading to Churchill.
Congrats to that. And again, just great job as always. And for everyone who knows, for me with Scott Shapiro, I wouldn't be in this chair without Scott Shapiro. So wish him all the best going forward. But great news, my man. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll talk again really soon.
Spencer, thanks for having me on, man.
I want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Kevin Kilroy, for coming on, talking all things Fairgrounds Racing with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatale. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin, and our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.